Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the pop star Britney Spears is set to make a rare personal address later today at a court hearing in LA. She's attempting to break free from her father's control, and the American singer has been under a court-appointed conservatorship since 2008. Her virtual appearance will be the first since the Framing Britney documentary was released earlier this year, and that focused on how she was treated by the media and also this controversial conservatorship. Well, here's Britney's former lawyer, Adam Streisand, speaking in that documentary.
Britney did not want her father to be the conservator of her person, right? The person who makes decisions about her medical care and treatment and so on and so forth. She also didn't want him controlling her finances. I felt that based on my interactions with Britney, that she was capable of retaining me and directing me, and that the judge should have allowed that to happen.
Well, that's her former lawyer there. So the question is, what can we expect from today's court hearing? And I'm joined in the studio by US correspondent with the Business Post, Marion McKeown. And first of all, it's lovely to have you here.
And it's lovely to be here, Claire. Thank you.
And welcome home to you.
Thank you.
This is a big story right across the world, really, isn't it? Everyone's watching with interest to see what's going to happen. Will you tell us a little bit about this situation she's been in since 2008?
Yeah, it's, you know, I'll preface it by saying, to me, it's the most bizarre situation. And this can happen to a grown woman in the 21st century. It's just astonishing. And I would also say that there has been no equivalent arrangement for any of the male pop stars or actors that we've seen very publicly go off the rails. And it seems that it's uniquely puzzling. The conservatorship, basically what it means is that Britney Spears at the age of 39, and since it's been in existence now for what, 12 years?
Yeah.
So really since she was in her late 20s, has been under the complete control of mainly her father, but also a number of other people who've come in and out in various. A conservatorship applies to two things. It basically happens to people who suffer severe mental disability, whether because of an accident or some kind of a trauma or whatever, or people who may be suffering from a progressive disease like dementia, or, you know, people who may be temporarily, because of maybe some kind of a nervous breakdown, unable to take care of their affairs. But for somebody who's clearly a functioning adult, notwithstanding her struggles with mental health from time to time, it seems strange. So what happens is the conservatorship is awarded, a guardian is effectively appointed, in this case her father, Jamie Spears, who has, let's say, issues of his own, is putting it mildly. So he's in charge of all of her finances. He tells her when she can work, where she can work, who she can see, who can visit her. Apparently, she claims he even decided she wanted to redesign her kitchen, and he decided how the kitchen would be redesigned, because so she's allowed to have, and she's also got two teenage boys who are really young children when this was put into place, and she'd lost custody of them at that stage. I mean, she's had an astonishingly difficult life, and the price of fame, I think, in her case has been exorbitant. But she has no legal power over her own persona, over her medical treatment, over where she lives, what she does. And yet the irony to me with this was, there was, after the guardianship was varied and a lawyer was brought in to co-manage it, she appeared in Las Vegas 7 nights a week for 4 years. Now, the irony is, and for which she got an allowance from her father to do. So they're making millions and millions and millions
and
out of her.
Thing. But when I watched the documentary, I saw that, and I knew she had done the residency in Las Vegas. But there is that thing where you say, how can she be capable of doing that level of work and yet she can't decide who she should be seeing, meeting, and how she spends her money? It is an extraordinary situation.
Yeah.
But the one piece of the jigsaw we don't get to hear about, and she's perfectly entitled to keep this private, is about her, what happened to her, what her mental state is. Now, we don't get any of that because she doesn't really discuss that in detail, does she?
Yeah. She's been completely private. Like, she puts up the odd Instagram or, you know, post or whatever, but she hasn't been doing interviews. So all of these documentaries, including the one by the New York Times, which came out earlier this year, about Britney Spears. She didn't take part in it. They're basically cut and paste of old footage. The New York Times documentary was interesting because it pointed out how awfully she'd been treated by the media, that she'd become this figure of fun, derision.
She was, yeah.
And I remember one interview with Diane Sawyer, who's a serious journalist, and the way she spoke to her, it wasn't just, you know, there were the Howard Sterns who were being gratuitously cruel, there was Jay Leno who was idiotic and cruel, but you know, Diane Waters, a serious journalist, Diane Sawyer, I beg your pardon, and like shaming her. You know, when she was a young woman, she was about 26, 27 at the time, about whether or not she'd had sex with Justin Timberlake, about whether or not she cheated on him. And then she said, "My God, Britney, your clothes. What are you, you know, this sort of, how dare she?" And then quoting some woman, a former governor's wife in Maryland, some extreme right-wing mother who said if she had a gun, she'd shoot Britney Spears. And, you know, Diane Sawyer quoted this as though the woman had a point. You know, and really, so there were so many strands to the way she was treated by the media. She's crazy. She's unstable, insane. She's, you know, she's slutty. She's bonkers, and then a figure of fun on top of all that. Now, I remember when she did have that breakdown, because it was shown on TV, it was very public, where she
attacked, umbrella and the shaved head.
And you could see the agony she was in, and that she was still being hounded and deliberately provoked and taunted by this pack who were following her. And at the time, she was a young mum, as well as having this huge career under enormous pressure. She had two children within a year of each other, which would have had its own pressures and exhaustions, and she was still working around the clock and promoting round the clock. So I think that one of the smart things she did was in 2019, she said, I'm not performing anymore. You know, I'm not going to do. And it's funny because people who do that Vegas stint, they tend to be stars who need to make money, you know, who are down on, they're on their uppers for whatever reason, from Elvis to whoever, where they need a chunk of change and they go there for months.
Or they decide to do it, don't they, when they're at the end and they don't want to be traveling around the world and they know that they can make great money and be in one place.
But it is about the money, Vegas. It really is. So she's doing this for 4 years, as I said, 6-7 nights. It's grueling. Like, a lot of times they're like circus animals almost. They're twice a day performing some days. And she said, no, I'm not working 7 days a week like this, selling out shows to get a couple of $100 a week as an allowance. And you kind of think, good for her, but this was the leash she was being kept on. Now, her father, what will be decided today, and she, as you say, she's appearing, I believe, via Zoom, but that won't stop all the fans from turning up. I was there for an appearance, and she wasn't there in person, and thousands of them gather outside with their free Britney posters, and it's really, they're very emotional about her, you know, and you kind of think, God, you know, I'm sure it's reassuring to her that she has some allies.
She has indicated, hasn't she, on one of her Instagram posts, that she does appreciate their support, even though she doesn't directly address their concerns.
Exactly.
Just on the performing thing, we've a really short clip here. She mentioned performing again on her Instagram a couple of days ago. We'll have a listen to what she had to say.
Am I going to take the stage again? Will I ever take the stage again? I have no idea. I'm having fun right now. I'm a transition in my life and I'm enjoying myself. So that's it.
I'd love to know how she is. Perhaps we'll find out today.
You know, I don't know if we'll find out much, because the last time she spoke, and the court was cleared, there was no audio allowed, there was no, she spoke in camera. This time, apparently, she is speaking directly to the judge. I think what she's going to ask for is to have her father removed entirely. He became very ill in 2018 and he retired from the, he's now managing a sliver of it under the conservatorship. But she believes quite rightly that she should be able to control her own affairs with the help of a lawyer of her choosing, not somebody that the court has appointed. Okay. It's very difficult to get out of these things, strangely, once you're in them.
Well, let's wait and see what happens today. A couple of other things I wanted to talk to you about, Marion. The US COVID death toll surpassed 600,000 last week. Just extraordinary. Is life back to normal now there?
You know, it sort of depends on where you go, and that's not, and I'll explain that. I was in Washington a couple of weeks ago and people are still masked and they're still, you know, observing outdoor seating, that kind of thing. Los Angeles, where I came from, is just a free-for-all. There's no masks in sight, there's no nothing. The Hollywood Bowl is back up and running, and there are open-air concerts again. So that feels much more like life is back to normal. But the one thing you do notice everywhere is the economic scars, because there are whole rows of shops shops, restaurants, bars that are closed down and they'll never come back. So you've a lot of boarded up shop fronts in all the cities. And then if you go somewhere, like I was in Georgia a while ago, and they're like, COVID, what COVID? What's that? You know, there's such a, because it's interesting that over 20% of people over 65, over a fifth in a number of states, Arkansas, Arizona, Missouri, Idaho, are not being vaccinated. Even the people who are highly at risk, who know they could be killed by this, if they get this. So
through their own choice, they're not being
absolutely
vaccinated.
Okay. They're refusing flat out. And, you know, it kind of makes me laugh and exasperates me a little bit. They're doing this thing in a lot of states like California, going, come on, get a vaccine. We'll give you a car. We'll put you in a raffle. You might win $10 million. It's like taking a four-year-old to the doctor and promising them a lollipop. It's like, when will Americans realise 600,000 people are dead? You know, millions more have been sickened and are long-term disabled now, one form or another. And yet they have to be cajoled into getting a vaccine that could save their lives. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, it's a political issue there now as well.
Are those things working though? The free beers, the free burgers?
Apparently, I didn't get one.
Did you not?
I just went.
Well, you got chased in a supermarket by someone offering you a vaccine. I remember talking to you about
from the butcher's stand. But it is interesting. So I think at the moment, Joe Biden had wanted to say 4th of July, American independence from vaccine day, getting the symbolism of that. And he wanted there to be 70%, which would really be tantamount to herd immunity. At the moment, it's somewhere around 55%. I don't think he's going to get his 70% before the 4th of July. He might get up to 60, which is still pretty impressive. It's you know, about 600 million doses have been handed out at this stage.
When you go back then, what will you have to face in terms of self-isolation?
I think it'll be probably about 5 days. You get a test as soon as you go back,
okay,
and then you get another test. And then, because I've been fully vaccinated, I don't think, fingers crossed, because there's a lot of bureaucracy, as you know, around getting in and out of the States at the moment. So it should be okay, though.
Now, New York.
New York, yes.
Voters there went to the polls yesterday to vote for the next mayor. So what can you tell us about that? Who's the runners and riders and what's been happening?
Right, runners and riders. This has been, New York's so colourful. People say, oh, New York's gone. It's not. It's always going to be New York. There are four main people in front now. For the first time, they introduced what we would call single transferable voting, which we grew up with and we're all fine with. Well, it's causing chaos.
Right.
And the fact that you have to pick, you know, first, second, third, fourth and fifth is apparently driving people into paroxysms of confusion and anger and outrage. The person who's winning at the moment is Eric Adams. He's got about 31% of the vote. He's a long time New York kind of personality. He was a former police captain, and then he's got an interesting story. He was a 15-year-old teenager. He and his brother were picked up by he came from Brooklyn. They were picked up by a couple of white cops. They had been trespassing. They were taken to a basement in a precinct, and they were apparently beaten really severely. And what he thought was, instead of becoming very anti-police, he thought, I'm going to join the police because this isn't going to happen again, because then if I'm a policeman, I can try and fix this. So he was promoted throughout the police. He became a captain, and then he set up an organisation to tackle police brutality within the police force in New York. People, depending on who you talk to, say he was a show pony, that this was all just about style and headlines, that he never did much. Other people say no, he was really committed. He went on to become, again, a checkered career, quite a controversial guy. There's all this absurdity with New York races. About a week or two back, people say, you live in New Jersey. And this is a big thing, like, you live in New Jersey. How dare you run for mayor of New York? He denies it. So he brought reporters to meet him in what was allegedly his apartment in Brooklyn. And then they did this gotcha. You're a vegan. There's salmon in the fridge. This isn't your apartment. So ridiculous stuff going on. But the usual New York, like, it's funny. So he's in the lead at the moment. Next to him is a woman called Professor Maya Wiley. Super smart woman. Formidably, she's a law professor, a civil rights activist. She was a federal prosecutor, an advisor to Bill de Blasio, who is the most unpopular man in New York at the moment, the current mayor, which may or may not help her. But she's in second place with 21%. And then the third place is the candidate who's best suited. It's a woman called Catherine Garcia. She ran New York's sewers, not to put too fine a point in it, for years, and did a superb job. She oversaw. She's a problem solver. She's a fixer. She's the woman New York needs at the moment. But New York goes for the charisma and the celebrity guy. It loves the Giulianis, even though it hates them. It loves the Ed Kochs. It loves
the shiny
larger
people
than life, the big personalities. So we'll see. And, you know, Eric Adams would fit that mold. But New York has a lot of problems at the moment. They need a good mayor. They really do.
Well, let's see how that plays out as well. Marion, it's lovely to see you.
Lovely
Thank you
to
very
see
much
you there.
For coming
Thanks
in.
So
Marion
much.
McKeown, we'll take a break.
Text
text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.